So welcome to another What's Current podcast from NAPIT. And today I'm joined by Peter Kay from CEDA, and we're going to be talking about catering technicians and their involvement in the electrical industry. So welcome, Peter. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
It's great. Now, we've worked together a little bit in the past, haven't we, in various guises and when I was working for other people. So we've had that relationship and we understand what's going on with CEDA. I've got an insight into what you do, but tell us a little bit about CEDA and your role and who they are.
Okay, CEDA stands for Catering Equipment Distributors Association. Our members are experts in the design, supply, installation, maintenance of commercial kitchens.
So everything.
Put it in simple terms. My role as technical support advisor really covers anything on the technical side of the industry. CEDA basically offers support, guidance, information with the objective of trying to make our members the most professional, most effective companies in the industry. And a lot of my work is related to service technicians and their jobs. So it includes training, it includes guidance on best practice, producing a lot of documents, guidance documents, what we call standard documents, which are templates basically that members can use, all sorts of policy documents that you might need, a company might need for compliance when tendering or quoting or anything like that. Yeah. So it covers a multitude of things. Also been very involved in developing an apprenticeship for service engineers. Believe it or not, it took 15 years. Every time, when we first started, 2005, I started trying to set up an apprenticeship, and apprenticeships then were based on qualifications, and there was no suitable qualification for a catering equipment engineer technician. GAS ACS accreditations weren't classed as a qualification.
No.
So it had to be an electrical qualification, and there wasn't a suitable electrical qualification. We actually investigated creating or developing a qualification, and yes, it was possible, but it was going to cost £100,000 to develop it and get it delivered. And try telling that to a member that 100 members, you've got to pay £1,000 to train your engineers on something that isn't a legal requirement.
No, it's not going to happen, is it?
No, exactly. So it was part then. Then they came on to an alternative system of, I can't remember what they actually called them, but basically programs that you could pick and choose elements to put together an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
And we worked with Energy Utility Skills to make sure that what we needed would be in that. And then when it was published, it wasn't in it.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So again, we failed and trying to get that altered. We spent 2 or 3 years trying to get it altered and it never worked. Then they came up with Trailblazers. That's when we succeeded.
Because that wasn't so much qualification based, was it? It was employer-led qualification. Apprenticeships, wasn't it?
Led by employers, and we had incredible help from the Institute for Apprenticeships. The relationship manager was her title. It's been absolutely fantastic. And we created that, we got it approved in 2019, and we then struggled trying to find a training provider for the simple reason the funding was £15,000. The apprenticeship includes a gas managed learning program, and the gas managed learning program as an apprenticeship on its own gets funded £21,000. But we could only get £15,000.
The maths don't work there,
and it's only part of it, So,
plus an expensive apprenticeship to set up as well because of the equipment required.
But we finally found somebody who would do it for the 15,000. They do it on block release, a company in Stockport in Cheshire. And we started our first cohort on the 23rd of February 2020, 1 month before lockdown.
Oh, goodness me,
A 27-month apprenticeship ended up as being about 3.5 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. COVID got in the way.
Out of the, I think it was 12 started, 6 finished it. We lost them, obviously.
Yeah.
Some were maybe
some natural drop off, I suppose. Yeah.
Some just couldn't cope with it all being done online for a long time. But we achieved it. And the good news, we've now found another sub-training provider, a college in Surrey. They're going to run it on day release, and they started on Monday of this week.
Oh, fantastic. So there's 14, two centres doing it
14
now.
Apprentices started on that.
That's brilliant.
So that's something that we've worked hard on.
I can tell, yeah, 15 years worth.
I think we've now got... There is another company. They're not a senior member, but they've set up their own academy. Mm. And I think they've managed about 40 apprentices in the last few years.
Brilliant.
On the standard that we developed.
Yeah.
So that's sort of one of our...
That's really encouraging, isn't it? Because I suppose with catering engineers and technicians, there's so much crossover, isn't there, into that mechanical engineering kind of electrical world. It's a real specialism, isn't it, what they do?
It's a very complex job. They've got to be knowledgeable and skillful in a lot of different areas. Yeah. It's not just a gas fitter. It's not
a spark,
just electrical work. It's not just fault finding. It's pretty well everything.
Yeah.
And the actual use of the equipment, you know, if somebody says I'm getting bad results, it might not be absolutely nothing to do with the equipment.
Yeah.
Could be the way they're using it, could be the recipe.
Yeah.
The recipe that works in one oven doesn't work in another oven.
So the fault finding side of it is so large, isn't it? And yeah, it's a real skill set, isn't it? Yeah, because like I say, I've had some experience of it of my time working for a maintenance company when we dealt with Sainsbury's quite a lot. We saw all this catering equipment, and like you say, sometimes instead of having your gas engineer there, your sparky and your catering engineer that brought the bit of kit, it's one person, which is the guy on the ground that's meant to install it. So you as technical advisor for that, then you've got your hands full. You're dealing with all kinds of weird and wonderful questions and queries from members most days.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky in that I've got a team of members that form our technical support group. They're all experts in something, gas, electrical.
Yeah, they've got their specialisms.
Certain types of equipment.
Yeah.
I get a lot of help from them.
Yeah.
But I'm learning all the time. Every day is a school day.
Yeah, it is. I'm learning that. So, obviously, like I mentioned earlier, Pete, we've worked together before. Yeah. You know, I did some presentations and talked about things like testing safe isolation with some of your members and people from CEDA. What just highlight to our listeners probably some of the main kind of electrical issues that are really frustrating that you're trying to get across the line. I mean, we've talked about this before, but for people that don't know that kind of issues that they're encountering, what do you see as the main ones?
I think the starting point is a catering equipment or food service equipment technician is not an electrician.
Yeah.
We have a fairly clear demarcation line that says our technicians will work on the equipment and the supply, the cable from the equipment to the supply, the isolator, the socket,
whatever
the,
it's plugged
the box,
into,
whatever it is. That's their remit. Mm. They're competent to work on that. They're competent to isolate it safely and to test it for dead, safe to touch, all those things, and to test it in terms of earth continuity, insulation, and obviously to carry out repairs on it and understand fault finding and things like that.
Yeah.
The problem we have is that because a piece of equipment is connected to an electrical supply, the chef, the catering manager, and sometimes even the technician's own boss thinks, well, you can do that bit as well.
Yeah, you're there anyway, you might as well.
Can you change the isolator? Yeah. Can you connect to this isolator? Well, a technician can say, you can go back to the board and check that the circuit breaker is the right size, but he doesn't know what the cable is or anything like that. It needs checking by a qualified electrician.
Yeah.
And one of the problems we've had is getting across to technicians that they've got to be able to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that.
Yeah.
You've got to get that. You've got to confirm to me that supply is safe.
Mm.
We've had a situation last year where, well, not last year, it was about 7 years ago now, a technician was electrocuted working on a waste disposal unit. Mm. Last year it came to court, and obviously it it created a lot of thinking and problems about problems in our industry caused by sloppy work, really. Yeah. Not just sloppy work on the part of a technician. We had a waste disposal unit where the manufacturer provided it with a three-core cable. The earth was connected to a terminal on the waste disposal unit, but the terminal wasn't connected to the earth on the waste disposal unit.
So there was no continuity.
There was no earth onto the cable. And then to make it work, the cable was connected to a fuse spur, and there was no earth to the fuse spur.
Oh, goodness me.
After a few years, the waste disposal unit started to leak. Water got into the control box. The technician was sent saying there's a leak, and it's very much like a domestic waste disposal unit where you've got a motor hanging from a rubber connector that connects to the sink. The technician had been told the rubber had split. It wasn't that, it was some seals that had gone, but it had got into the unit. He replaced the rubber, tested it, touched it, and electrocuted himself.
Killed him?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Other lessons that were learned from that was the company who installed the waste disposal unit, and it was actually the one that was faulty, was a replacement that was fitted in 2013. And he just connected it to the spur, left it working, didn't bother to check the installation instructions. The installation instructions had two conditions. One, it should be protected by an RCD, which it wasn't. And the other, it should have been, the instructions say it should be connected by a qualified electrician, which a technician isn't a qualified electrician. He's a competent person to connect it, but not a qualified electrician.
Yeah.
The company who employed him had to plead guilty, and they were fined £70,000. Suddenly everybody's aware that we need to be a lot more careful.
Yeah.
And
I mean, you've got a death, a court case, a fine, and all that goes with it, and suddenly it takes that for the industry to wake up.
Yes.
Whereas I know, you know, speaking to you before, Peter, you've been campaigning for this kind of stuff long before we end up at this point, because you saw the frustrations, and you just mentioned there, things like RCDs. I mean, as a sparky myself, things like RCDs in catering equipment with lots of movable metalwork and high-powered electrical equipment, lots of water, it's just a no-brainer, but it's never been mandated, has it?
No.
So you've been talking to IET and various people about that. Tell us more about that.
We put in a proposal to IET to amend 7671 to actually include an additional regulation relating specifically to commercial kitchens in the UK, because 7671 is used not only in the UK, it's used
across Europe,
across Europe and across the world in places. Yeah. So it's been suggested that we've asked for a separate regulation that requires RCDs for every item in a commercial kitchen, electrical item, obviously. Whether at the moment it's only commando sockets up to 32 amps, but hardwired should be protected at the same time.
Yeah,
they're dangerous places.
Of course they are. Yeah, like I say,
potentially dangerous.
Yeah, I've had experience of working in them. I remember I once flooded one in Maryhill, but I won't go into that story on a podcast because it makes me look totally incompetent. But these things happen, and that was an industrial dishwasher that I thought was isolated, and that's probably my point there. Actually, that's not a bad segue, because I remember with that particular job I did, I was tasked with doing the electrical side of it, but the new dishwasher was coming in, and my gaffer said, while you're there, which you've alluded to, while you're there, just cut through the cave, isolate the water supply. But it was a direct feed water supply, and it was boiling hot water that was supplying this thing. So I remember cutting it through with my hacksaw, I don't know, a pipe quite big, like say 50 mil, like an old, like almost taped up one, you've probably seen them before. And as I cut through it, this water gushed and flooded Maryhill Baker. The store manager was not too impressed that day. But anyway, we got over it. The staff were quite pleased because they got to stop for a little bit baking cakes and bread. But I suppose the point of that one is that your engineers, your members are seeing situations where they're going to ask to do things electrically. And that's the nature of the job. You're there, your gaffer might put pressure on you, or the demands of the job might say, but we've got to be confident enough to say, like you said, that demarcation lines of being able to say, no, it's not my remit, I'm not qualified to do that. That can be tricky on the ground, though, as your members.
What we started by producing some very comprehensive guidance documents that control all the engineers, all the technicians, and their service managers and people like that, clarifying why we're doing this, what the implications from the court case were, both commercial as well as technical, and we now are developing, or have almost completely developed, a code of practice that we hope to get accepted by HSE, by IET and all electrical organisations, that clearly identifies the demarcation line of what a service, food service equipment technician is competent to do, and what is their responsibility. The building owner, or the building owner's electrical contractor, trying to spell it out and publicise it so that technicians have got a document that can say, that's the code of practice for our industry, that's my responsibility, stops there. Your responsibility is to ensure that the supply that I'm connecting to is correct and safe. Hopefully it will work. It's going to take time. The development of the document has taken 6 months, but we're at the point now of sending out for final comments and consultation.
And you've been working with organisations like ourselves, because I think to have that, I mean, what's probably been the frustration, you felt like that's been isolation, but you need people to come on board with you, don't you? Exactly. And actually, once you get that backing from electrical organisations, that this actually makes sense and give you some guidance, we're all singing from the same heat. Because I think then, like you say, a code of practice, a clear document that points to it, like where that line stops, you know, we're not sparkies, this is what we do. And it's up to the client then to be able to say, right, if there's something wrong with the fixed wiring or further back on that electrical installation, that's not the technician's responsibility. I think it's going to be massive for the industry, especially if things like, if you can get the, you know, the RCD issue sorted, because you know, you think of going back to that case you mentioned 7 years ago, if there'd been an RCD on that circuit, ERTs had been in place, the engineer wouldn't have died.
The coroner actually put in his report that he was confident if an RCD had been fitted, the engineer wouldn't have died.
Would have done its job. That's the tragedy of that, isn't it? And like we've already talked about, those pressures can stem from, like you say, various sources, whether it's sometimes the engineers put them pressure on themselves for pride of work and getting the job done, don't they? You know, so they've got to be able to say no in those circumstances. So me and you are going to sort of formulate this more after this podcast and talk about some more stuff we're going to do. So tell us a bit about the plans we've got to work together, maybe on CPD and stuff like that.
Once we've got the code of practice, we want to produce videos to illustrate and train engineers on the competencies that they must have to comply with the code of practice. Basically safe isolation procedure, earth continuity testing, insulation testing, possibly an explanatory short video about just what the code of practice is.
Put it in practical terms.
We are developing an app for service technicians It'll be free to see the members, but it'll be available for non-members, but they're going to have to pay for it because obviously it's costing us. That should be launched in June. It will give technicians access through one app to virtually every manufacturer's technical information.
Wow.
Plus videos, so that's why we want to get the video about the code of practice on there quite quickly. And 5-minute videos on safe isolation.
Yeah, little snippets.
Little snippets. And quite an important part is people, technicians will say, oh, I know how to do an earth continuity test. What's the reading tell you? I don't know. We've got to make sure that they understand what their test meters are telling them.
Yeah, and it's important there, isn't it, as well, Peter, when we've talked before about making the distinction between the technicians are sort of, they're doing a verifying from their point of view, but we're not getting into the realms of inspection and testing, are we? You know, we consider an engineer to do inspection and testing in my world, we've got to say, right, this is where testing, like you said earlier, up to that piece of equipment in the supply cable, we're confident, you know, they might, like you say, go and have a look and see, oh yeah, it's got an RCBO because the manufacturer's instruction said it must have that, it must have that, whatever that may be. But I think it's important to highlight that these videos will be based around their specific job role. Yeah. We're not, like say, we want to get those lines unblurred, for want of a better word, to make sure that they understand what they do and what's not their responsibility. So like you say, what should we be doing and what are we not supposed to do? So I'm looking forward to working with you on those, and we're going to go down to Canna, can't we, and do a few videos and have some fun filming the day. So I look forward to that. We'll do them as a bit of fun. So finally, if our listeners want to sort of know more about what you do, because like I say, there is a crossover between the Sparky world and Caterine engineers that do sometimes all fall into the same remit. Where do they learn more about your organisation? Head to the website, I presume.
Head to the website.
Yeah.
CEDA.co.uk.
Yeah. Loads of information on there. Yeah.
There's contact details for myself and other people in this organisation.
Yeah.
We're only a small organisation, so there's really only 3 people that you can contact.
Yeah.
And if it's technical, it's me.
It ends up, yeah.
If it's general management, it's Adam, who's the director general.
Yeah.
And if it's administration, it's Fiona, who does everything else.
Everything else, yeah. No, it's great work you're doing, though, Pete. And I've really enjoyed getting to know you and working with your organisation. And I think it's important that we raise these issues. We can't sweep them under the carpet. You know, in whatever industry it is, we can't have deaths through electrocution. And when they sort of, you know, basic things that could save people's lives are important.
It's one death is too many, but I think in the last 12 years or something like that, we've had 3 technicians.
Yeah.
Two have been their own fault.
Mm.
Still no consolation.
No.
But the last guy with the waste disposal unit.
That was a multitude of things, wasn't it?
Yeah. Absolute multitude of.
Yeah, things that could have
things
been.
Things that could have been right. Shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And it's still happening. In the last few months, I've seen at least 4 photographs of where a technician has gone to connect a new piece of equipment to a new supply and found that there's no earth connected to the isolator or to the socket.
That's just basics, isn't it, as well?
And he just had to walk away and say, sorry, I can't do this, and show the client.
Yeah, until that's done.
You've not got an earth, you've got to get your electrician back.
That's what we want, the confidence to be able to do that. Well, it's been great speaking to you, Peter, really fascinating, and like I say, looking forward to working with you in the future, doing videos, maybe catch up on what that looks like in 6 months' time, 12 months' time, when the industry obviously highlight these things. Thanks for your time, Peter.
You're welcome, thank you.
So thanks again for listening to another What's Current podcast from NAPIT. So head to the CEDA website, have a look what these guys do. Really important work that these guys are doing. So, and see you on the next one. Bye-bye for now.